This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Turn up your volume, because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast, with Tony Maradero.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la victoire, ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination. It's going to be sick.
Happy Monday, April 8th, everyone. And thank you for joining us right here on the Sick Podcast with a very under the weather Tony Marinaro. I'm going to get this one out. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go an hour, folks. I think I'm going to cut this one short tonight. And this show tonight is brought to you by some Kleenex. And if that's not enough, because I ran out, because I've gone through boxes and boxes and boxes this weekend, and I wasn't been able to go out to buy another pack. It's also brought to you by some toilet paper. No, it's not. It's brought to you by neither. I don't have enough of it this weekend. It's definitely brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, a leading full service logistics provider serving all North America. Driven to be different. Also brought to you in part by these guys right behind me here. LaBitte.TB, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. LaBitte.TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. LaBitte.TB, embrace your true nature. Also brought to you in part by Playground. Experience Playground like never before. Enjoy world-class poker, 900-plus gaming machines, weekly events, karaoke, Mondays, comedy, Wednesdays, live bands on Fridays and Saturdays, and much more. Discover their latest additions, of course, the Etc. Steakhouse, Drunken Dragon's exquisite sushi, the Esperanto Cigar Lounge, and Babel Lounge's Mezza and Cocktails. Playground, your ultimate destination for entertainment. Just over the Mercier Bridge, visit playground.ca for details. All right, the Montreal Canadiens had a couple of games on the weekend and a couple of games and two more losses. On Saturday night, the Montreal Canadiens played host to Austin Matthews and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it was Austin's Maple Leafs winning by a score of 4-2 on four goals that came in the second period for the Leafs. As a matter of fact, even the Canadiens' two goals came in the second period. No Arbor Jack guy for the Canadiens on Saturday night. Mike Pezzetta was there, and Ryan Reeves went to work. It's something I'm sure we'll talk about with Eric Engels. Last night, the Canadiens were at MSG. Caden Primo got the start and goal. It was Montembeau on Saturday night. And guess how many shots Caden faced last night? 46. Yes, 46 shots. Canadiens and the Rangers were tied at one going into the third, and the Rangers scored four goals in period number three. We'll break it down. We'll talk about it. We'll elaborate on it without further ado for Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Eric Engels, how are you?
What's going on? Everything good? I guess not.
No, I'm probably going to have to rely on you to do most of the talking. I don't know if you can sense it, but I'm starting to lose my voice slowly but surely. But yeah, I've been... I started sneezing probably Friday, Saturday night, and it's just yesterday was a disaster. Today's Tony, been difficult, but
the league doesn't care. Olive, the league doesn't care. The league continues.
The league doesn't care. Yes, good one. One of my Marty St. Louis lines. The league doesn't care. When did they play 4-6 or 5-9 on the road, whatever, league doesn't care.
Did you listen to him last night? Did you listen to his comments?
A little bit.
I didn't. I didn't listen to a word he was saying. I just watched his face.
Oh, okay. Got it. That's where you're going with this. Okay.
Yeah. He looked fucking fed up.
Yeah. Yeah, he's fed up. No. It's okay. You know, he looked like there's a couple of games left in the season, and enough with this already. And by the way, I'm starting to see that from a couple of players as well. I'm even starting to see that from a couple of members of the media. Like, it's all coming to an end here, and then let's get on with the NHL playoffs, and then we'll revisit with the Canadians. But hey, the Sick Podcast is going to be going on. I'm going to be going on here. There's never a dull moment when it comes to Montreal Canadiens or their fan base. They want to get their Montreal Canadiens fix every day, and we're going to try and give it to them.
Look, he's not giving up. They're not giving up, but it's a good thing that he's fed up and so are they. Like, it's not a bad thing. And also, I think everybody's just exhausted with it, right? Like, they have made the type of advances, no matter what you see in the standings and what the points say, you could see the system has been installed to a point where it could be effective against virtually any team. Toronto, New York, two high-powered, high-octane offensive teams. Like, look at the Toronto game, Tony. You know, the Leafs, for 55 minutes of the game, were in complete cruise control. Before they scored four goals and after they scored four goals. And when they wanted to turn it on, they did, and they beat the Canadiens. And the Canadiens played a really strong hockey game for the most part and scored two goals. You know, they got them from their two best scorers. And so it just illuminated how clearly they need more talent on the team. Everybody knows this.
Yeah.
It's been an exhausted storyline. I wrote about it last night after the Rangers game.
Yeah.
It's time to get to the next part of this where we're no longer talking about development over results. And I can tell you, looking at Marty's face, he's ready for it. Speaking of the players, they're ready for it. And when we go into next year, I'm going to be writing about moral victories or how this guy stood out and that guy stood out. They're going to get criticized heavily for when they lose, and they're going to get praised for when they win. And it's going to be more like the normal type of seasons we've seen, because this is an unprecedented time in the Canadiens' history. In over 100 years, they've never gone down this path of doing an actual rebuild. And I don't want people mistaking me for saying this, like the Canadiens are guaranteed to take a big step next year. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that when we get into next season and Kirby Doc is healthy and Kent Hughes has done some work in the summer that hopefully brings some talent to the Montreal Canadiens, that they can not only compete in those games but actually win them, the expectation will not be, oh, okay, let's hope for growth this season. They're going to have to mention the P word come golf tournament, and they're going to have to live up to that own internal expectation. The external expectations are going to have to rise. Like, let's say we're done this part of it, I think.
Yeah. Let's say Doc doesn't get hurt. How many wins per month more you think they're better with Doc?
I don't know. It's probably not enough for them to make the playoffs this season, but would they be that far off? Not necessarily. But
you know exactly where I was going with this. I thought about it and I was like, if Doc plays next year, let's say Kent Hughes doesn't make a move.
No.
But Doc plays next year. They have 70 points right now. Okay. Let's bring up the standings, as a matter of fact, if we can.
Sure.
We'll show you the teams below the Canadiens in the standings. If we don't have it, we're probably going to get it any minute now. But I think we have it somewhere. I sent it to Agnello and Sammy, where we have the Canadiens are the fifth worst record in the National Hockey League, fifth last. They were fifth last 1 year ago, by the way. But the Canadiens have more points than they had a year ago. So a year ago, they had 68 points. And as you see, this year, they have 70 points in 77 games. So for those who are going to be listening to this and they won't actually see the standings, this is what we'll do. We'll say it for you. San Jose is dead last, 44 points in 77 games. Chicago's second last, 51 points in 77 games. The Ducks have 55 points in 78 games. Columbus has 64 points in 78 games. The Canadians have 70 points in 77 games. The Coyotes have 71 points in 77 games. The Senators, 72 points in 77 games. The Flames, 73 points in 77 games. And the Kraken have 77 points in 76 games. So the Canadians are going to finish fifth last, sixth last, seventh last, or eighth last. You would think they're not going to catch Seattle, who's got 7 points more and a game in hand. So fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth. Everyone watching right now and everyone listening is going to hope, because of draft purposes and the lottery and percentages, that the way you see the standings now are the way they're going to end, and the Canadians will be the fifth worst team in hockey. But I was looking at this, and I was like, okay, let's say the Canadians have the same players next year, but they have Kirby Dach. Would they make the playoffs next year if it's only Kirby Dach? Because, I don't know, is Lane Hutson going to be starting the year in Montreal next year? Yes, or no?
This is not even a hypothetical worth going down, because they're not coming back with the exact same team and only Kirby Dach healthy next season. Right. You know, the chances that either Lane Hutson or David Reinbacher is on the team, yes, it's a given. The chances that maybe Logan Mailloux is on the team, potentially, yes. But beyond that, there's going to be addition by subtraction, and there's going to be some addition also. And I think you look at Marty's face last night answering those questions, and you look at the motivation of a guy like Kent Hughes, he's not going to be able to solve this entire roster and turn it into a cup contender as of next season. But he is going to be able to, I believe, with the assets at his disposal, make them competitive enough that they should be in the fight for a playoff spot. Whether or not they make it or not, I still think we're a year away from being able to look at them and say the expectation should be playoffs or bust here. But I think between now and when we come back in October, and obviously I'll be joining you throughout the summer and talking about it and whatever gets
done. Thank you. Thank you.
There's a lot that need. This is a massive summer. Like, Kent Hughes has done fantastic work. You've talked about it all season long. He's done great work up until this point, but this is the easier part of the rebuild. And now he's transitioning into the harder part of adding more pieces that bring this team to a much more respectable level than it's at right now, and subtracting some that are weighing it down. And you know, you could pick a lot of the players, mostly out of the forward group in the bottom six of it, that can't be here next year if this team is going to be a lot more competitive. And you can identify some targets out on the market and through the draft board for, like you said, if the Canadians finish fifth to last and they have a good chance in the lottery of getting a really good player, that they could potentially add what is most needed on this team, which, in addition to Kirby Dach being healthy and returning to being the player he's going to be, is two top six forwards. That's what they need. Now, Newhook looks like he could potentially become a top six forward. I view him more as a middle six guy who can move up and down. He can, on any given night, he could be a really good third line center or a pretty decent top six winger if he's playing with good players. So
he's a third line center on a team that can win the cup.
Yeah, I think there's hope there.
Yeah.
I think Joshua Wa looks like a top nine player.
100%.
Even at this age, I think he looks like that, which is good news for them. You look at the development of a guy like Owen Beck. I think whether he's on the team by next fall or not, he becomes a factor in the near future and a guy who could be a top nine forward as well. That's great. But like, in addition to Doc coming back healthy, this team needs at least one more top six forward joining between now and October. And then
should have been Josh Anderson. He should have been that guy.
Yeah,
he's not going to be, and he isn't.
And nope. I'm not putting it past him to bounce back and be better than he is this year, but I also don't think it's a guarantee he'll be here. And I don't think it's a guarantee that he'll be able to, you know, you can't bet on these things until they happen. It's just like, if you would have asked me last year if Yoel Armia would be doing what he's doing this year, I would have said no, like not a chance. I don't even think he'll be on the team. So we'll see where that goes. But, you know, talking about Party's exasperated face last night, I think part of it had to do with, you know, he always talks about trends and one-offs. I mean, the bad play in his own zone by Josh Anderson there leading to the Rangers' fourth goal, shanking a shot from the slot when he has a chance to score and not even getting one on net. It's just this stuff, and believe me, I'm as compassionate as anybody. I feel for Josh Anderson. This is just a shitty year for him in terms of breaks, luck, and just bad juju and all the things that go into making the game a lot more difficult than it should be for him, Tony.
Yes.
But you can't, at the end of the day, he makes $5.5 million to be a much more effective player than he's being. And there's little details in the game that I don't know if Marty can continue to swallow that. So,
yeah, no. And by the way, I don't know if Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon can continue to swallow that, because I don't think they're presidents of the fan club. I really don't. He's a frustrating player, not only for the fan base. You're right. It's a season gone wrong for him, from A to B. But there's, you know, when you're not producing, there's other things you can do in the meantime to try and show your utility to the team. And it's just, it seems like for him, everything's off at the same time. And a lot of people have questioned whether or not he'd be a fit with the system and the way they want to play. And, but you said something, instead of saying, look at Armia, they sent him down to Laval, he came up, they sent him back down again, he came up, started working with the mental coach, which we've discussed already. You wrote about that. You also talked about on this podcast that, you know, you asked Anderson if he thought, you know, a mental performance coach could help him. And he said he didn't think that he needed one right now. The last time you spoke to him, we talked about that. But a couple of minutes ago, you said, well, I don't even know if Josh Anderson's going to be here next year. So I think that, I don't know if you've said that before. I'm gonna say to you what I would say to anyone, Eric. How can you trade that player in that contract and find somebody who's gonna want it?
Nobody's taking Josh Anderson at $5.5 million for three more seasons. Will they take him at less than that? Would they take him on a team where he fits into a system where he's going in straight lines and making closer to four? Yes. I know this. Like, you know, you could take my word for it. I go to the GM meetings every year. I speak to people all around the league, and there are people that would be interested in that player at that price range if he fits within their particular system. But no matter where Josh Anderson plays, he has to have a summer where he really looks deep inward and finds a way to be a much more effective version of himself. And maybe it's as simple as washing the stink of this season away and like just getting away from it and just, you know, he's going to get married this summer, focusing on the positives of his life, whatever it is. Maybe he has a come to Jesus moment where he decides he needs some help in order to get there. Maybe that's not the way for him. You know, it's not for us to decide what's best for Josh Anderson, but he needs to decide and he needs to find a way to get his career back on the track it should be on. Because there's one thing, no matter how you think Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon think about him, or the rest of the league thinks about him, or his coach thinks about him, who's invested so much time and trying to help him, Josh Anderson playing the way Josh Anderson can help anyone. But he cannot continue to play this way. And he knows that. Marty knows that. I'm sure Kent and Jeff know that. I'm sure Jeff Molson knows that. I'm sure everybody in the league knows that. And I don't know what it's going to take. Only Josh can answer that. Marty always likes to say it starts with the players. This is something he is facing right now, the biggest and most important offseason of his career to have something change here. And it's baffling. Like, honestly, like I go back to the training camp and preseason, and I understand you don't put too much stock into those things. It's just the way he looked, the confidence with which he was playing, the way he was adapting to the way the Canadians want to play and the things that he was specifically working on. It's not to suggest that, oh, he was going to go out and score 30 goals. It's just that it looked like he was going to be a player that could help them. And right now, he doesn't look like that and has to find a way to get his way back to it, no matter where he ends up next year. And I'll tell you this, Yoel Armia, when he was sent down to the AHL, you know, it wasn't just the numbers game and trying to make space for a young player. That it was about the culture of the team. And that's not to say that they looked at Yoel Armia and said, wow, this guy doesn't try hard enough. It's that he was so in his own kind of negative, clouded type of energy that they just, versus putting a younger guy and opening up space for a younger guy to make the team, whether it was Heinemann or Yolonen or whoever, it just made sense for them, for the culture, to make that move. They got lucky that he responded extremely well to it, and he's looking like a guy who could actually help them moving forward. As far as Anderson is concerned, if he comes into training camp next year, if he makes it through the summer and isn't traded, you know, by the Canadians retaining space or taking back another contract or whatever it is, because again, not going anywhere at that number for that amount of years left, and it's more of the same and everything looks the same, the benefit of the doubt is going to go out the window, and he has to know that.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So let's talk about, let's backtrack. Where we go here? Let's go back to Saturday night. Arbor Jack guy, not playing in the game, didn't play last night either. So he misses his appointment with Reeves and with Rempe. He did play, of course, on Thursday night versus Tampa Bay. He was involved in an altercation. Who knows when he got hurt, where he got hurt. Max Truman of Donny Coulisse earlier today says that he has it on good information that Jack Guy was heading out to the United States today, probably trying to get another opinion on whatever's going on. You saw Ryan Reeves play with a little bit more courage than he did last game when Jack Guy was in the lineup. My buddy George Larac has said earlier today on BPM Sports, and look, you got to agree with him, this is why you want Arbor Jack Guy to be in your lineup and part of the Montreal Canadiens going forward, because as long as it's still in the game, he can make players be a shyer version of themselves, opposing players, of course. Your thoughts on Jack Guy not playing, the game that Reeves had, and Pezzetta having to answer the bell versus Reeves?
Yeah, a lot of thoughts on it. The first is that there's many more reasons to want Arbor Jack Guy to be in your lineup regularly. And if it was just to have people stay in their lane and not get out of control and keep the game in a certain place, it's not a good enough reason for me. And that's the thing I like about Jack Guy, is that it doesn't have to just be about that for him. It's certainly a valid point. He calms the waters in just his having his presence there. And that is worth something for sure. But we wouldn't be talking about Arbor Jack Guy with the amount of noise that surrounds him if he didn't have those other abilities. And I think, you know, Arbor Jack Guy has the ability, and I've said this from day one, if you look at all those guys on the second tier of the Canadiens' young defensive prospects, the most potential to become a top four defenseman, in my opinion. Just the well-rounded elements. And again, I don't think he's played 100 games in the league yet. Like, people will look at him and say, oh, that's not going to happen. It takes 300 games to become the type of player you're supposed to be in this league, and he's got 200 to go. So everybody take a pill on that one.
Yeah.
And I will, man, Toronto fans really need to take a pill on what I tweeted the other night about Pezzetta, you know, and Reeves. I said that, you know, Reeves wins the mismatch against Pezzetta and then taunts the entire Canadiens bench. I was stating a fact. Like, I don't care if there's a 9-pound difference on HockeyDB between Ryan Reeves and Michael Pezzetta. These are not two fighters in the same class. One of them is a fighter. Michael Pezzetta is a grinder who is willing to drop the gloves here and there and not take on the league's heavyweight champ. I have a ton of respect for Ryan Reeves, but for him to beat up Michael Pezzetta, who engaged with him in a fight willingly, fine. Like, no problem. Dominate the win, psych up the crowd. But to taunt the Canadiens bench like you just took Chris Nyland in his prime, like, that's the shit that people are just laughing at you about. I mean,
I know Austin Matthews
loved it and this, but like, it's just, to me, I have so much respect for who Reeves is as a fighter. Like, he has taken on the toughest dudes, but you took on a guy who is not in your class and you handled him the way you should, and you should not be celebrating like you just knocked out Mike Tyson. I mean, like, I'm sorry. Like, so whatever. I'll take the heat from the Toronto fans. They love me.
Yeah, yeah. There's no heat.
It's all good. But
you, like you just said, Pezzetta is a fourth line grinder, and he could take care of himself, and
he'll answer
a bell if he has to. But he's a middleweight. He's a super middleweight, if you want to call it. The other guy's a heavyweight. I mean, it's just they're not in the same league.
Yeah. Also, don't go by the weights that you see on HockeyDB when it comes to players, because I think Juraj Slafkovský is at 230 and he came in at 238 a year ago, and he told me the other day he's at 225 right now. So, like, Michael Pezzetta and Ryan Reeves, if you don't think that's a mismatch, like,
that's a big
mismatch. You're disrespecting Ryan Reeves as much as you are Michael Pezzetta. I just want to say, Michael Pezzetta is one tough dude for standing in there and being willing to do that with that guy, I think, for the second time in his career. Like, he's a tough dude who doesn't back away from anybody. And, you know, I just think I have no problem with Reeves handing him his lunch in that fight like he should. It's just, you want to taunt the entire Canadiens bench like you just – like, what a major accomplishment.
No, it was a stupidity. It was a clown show. Yeah. That's a real stupidity, man. It's a real stupidity. All right, okay. What did the Canadians show you on – you know what they showed me on Saturday night and Sunday night, and even on the Thursday night versus Tampa? The first line, they're legit. They can play versus anybody.
Yeah.
They can play versus anybody. Dude,
they've showed me the same thing that they've shown me for three quarters of the season, which is that they're committed to their system and their system works, and that their system could – match up with any team in the league, and that if you plug a couple more players that look like Nick Suzuki and Cole Caufield and Juraj Slafkovský into the lineup, you're going to get a lot more out of that system. It's just that simple. And again, we talk about Jack Eye. I have to look it up. Is he at 80 games of experience? Is that what it is? Help me out. I don't want to.
Jack Eye?
Yeah. How many games does he have under his belt?
I'm going to look it up for you
The point I'm making is Jordan Harris is the leader in the clubhouse in games.
95 games.
95. Out of all those young guys, Jordan Harris had 125 games.
Yeah.
Like, you wait and see what happens with these guys as they get from 125 to 200 and then 200 to 300. I mean, that's why next year this team should be able to take a big step because of what they have back there, because of the way those three guys on the top line are developing, and because Kent Hughes is going to reward a team that is committed and plays as hard as it does with the assets that he has to go out and get the talent that they need. He's not going to be able to fill all of it, but he's got a job to do here, and he's got to be held to account to do that job. He has gotten nothing but praise from this corner for the job that he has already done. I can't, outside of the Lehkonen deal, which looks barely slightly underwhelming in terms of return, you know, he still got a pretty good deal in that deal, and every other one has been good, and they have built a cohesive way with pieces that fit with what they're trying to do and the way they're trying to play. He has major work to do this summer and over the next year to set up what should be the pivotal summer of this entire build. Like, when you get to 2025 and that price contract is off the books and the team has matured another level, again, I want to scale back for 1 second just to say, I've seen what's happened with the Senators. I've seen what's happened with the Sabres. I understand, and we've been talking about it ad nauseum, whether it's looking at individual progress or the progress of a group, that these things are not linear, that it's not one step in front of the next and one step up the ladder. Sometimes you could tumble a bit and then to get back to another level. But the expectations should still be that they move forward. And he, more than anybody, Kent Hughes and Jeff Gordon with him, have a mandate to make sure that that happens. And I'll tell you, they have had incredible patience from the fans. They've had a lot of patience from the media. They've had a lot of patience from the owner. They have a lot of patience themselves in what they're doing. If they didn't, they'd be making a lot more mistakes in this phase of it. But patience is not limitless. And when Martin St. Louis talks about it being aggressive with the patients, meaning doing everything you can to accelerate things so you're not just sitting there and saying, well, this is good, this is where we're supposed to be, you got to take it to another level. And they're going to have an opportunity to do that, and they have to take advantage of it.
Look, I'm going to say this. There's a couple of trades that they made. They've worked out. I mean, I know Doc has been hurt, but Doc worked out. I mean, you saw when Doc was playing that that trade was worth making, and you saw that he could be a pretty good player for the Canadians. And Alex Newhook has worked out. And I talked about this earlier today on BPM Sports Radio. What I love about Newhook is that in some games, like, you know, the beauty of playing some of these games that they played the last three where they lost and they gave up 7 to Tampa on Thursday and 4 on Saturday, and they gave up 5 last night versus the Rangers. And yeah, it increases your chance to lottery, all that stuff. But when you lose games, it's easy to have passengers. And when you have passengers, I mean, they stick out like a sore thumb. Newhook's never been a passenger. And I saw a game. There was a game, I think, versus, I think it was the Flyers, the Panthers a couple of weeks back. And there was a game where it was a counterattack going back the other way, and he skated back full flight, full force, like 150 feet or whatever it was. No quit, no die attitude, ends up breaking up a play. There's a guy, they did their homework on him. Obviously, Kent Hughes knew him, knew a lot about Alex Newhook, the person, not only the hockey player. That's what you want. You want guys like that. That worked out from a character standpoint. That worked out from a hockey standpoint. They have 8 million draft picks. They can't all play here. You can't draft them all. Trade a couple. It worked for Doc. It worked for Newhook. You have to identify one or two more players like that and do the same thing all over again because it's a formula that works.
Yeah, and why can't they? Look at all the draft picks they have. Look at the plethora of young defensemen they have. Look at the guys who are proving that they're NHL caliber defense. Like, there's forward prospects too. Like, they have opportunities to do that. I think when you look at Alex Newhook and Kirby Dach, you know what the biggest success is going to be based on what they already are and not just where they're going? It's going to be 2.9 and 3.6, whatever it was. That's going to be the big success here. You talk about good trades that Ken Hughes made to get those guys. The contracts are going to look good and mitigate some of the bad ones that he inherited here.
Oh, big time.
So that's very important because what happens next in terms of the Canadians attempting to... Sorry, there's a lot of cheering going on. I guess people probably don't know this. We are taping this right now. We're not live at 10 p.m. because you're under the weather and I had to do this at this time. And we are currently at 3:26, where the exact full eclipse is happening, and it is very dark out right now. And people
thank you, are cheering. Thank you, yeah, thank you for bringing it up. And because at the time that this is going to be airing tonight,
can you hear people cheering?
I'm going to be in bed. I actually thought they were cheering because they knew that you were podcasting with me, and we had our support team. But
I thought they were cheering Kirby Dach's contract.
I will be in bed, or at least I hope to be, because I haven't slept much in the last couple of nights. I've been up and blowing my nose the entire time. But okay. So
Tony, let me ask you a question. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Take a look at the guys who are in their lineup right now.
Yeah.
Pick four of them that can't be here next year if this team's going to go forward.
Josh Anderson. Yulonen.
There's a guy who doesn't have any points, Tony.
Arvi Pinard?
No, he's got a couple.
How many points is he
at? Colin White has zero. He's gone.
Colin White, that's an afterthought. Yeah.
Harvey Pinard is going to be in a real battle to keep a spot in the NHL if he looks anything like the way he has this year.
Very, very disappointing. Like Yulonen, a beautiful story a year ago, beautiful story, but
if Yulonen gets qualified.
I love Max LaPierre. He's one of my favorites. Max had an opinion, and by the way, I understood the thought process behind his opinion. He wanted Rafael Arvi Pinard to play first line with Caulfield and Suzuki to start the season this year.
Well, that feels like years ago.
Yeah, and for those who are going to laugh it off, like, Max played for the Vancouver Canucks, among other teams, who had Alex Burrows playing on the same line as the Sedins, okay? Pascal Dupuis played on a line with Sidney Crosby. Max Talbot, at one time, played on a line with Sidney Crosby. Probably not long-term in Max's case.
Pascal Dupuis, go down the list. There's a bunch of guys.
You know, there's a lot of teams that don't build lines by trios. They build lines by duos, and they find a complementary player to those two players. All right? So I understood the logic. I always dismissed it because I didn't think that Raphael Harvey-Pinard would have...
You didn't think he'd be Alex Burrows. You didn't think he'd
I didn't think he'd have the hockey sense or the vision to be able to match those guys. But I also didn't think that he was the type of player that more that if he got 16, 17 minutes, he would be better. I've always thought that Raphael Harvey-Pinard, if he got less minutes, he would be better. This year, that's not working out either, because even when he's not getting a minute, it's not working out. But long story short, you know, sometimes I think that he may be a tweener. He may be one of the best players in the American Hockey League, but just not good enough for the NHL. Corey Locke had that problem, among others. But, you know, when they say that when you're a Quebecer, it's harder in Montreal. And I say that there's a lot of examples that when you're a Quebecer, it's easier. Everyone loves RHP, everyone. But if he wasn't, like, he's being protected.
He's being protected by the fact that there isn't much competition for his job, because if there was right now, he wouldn't have it. You're right about him right now. He's going to have a major job to do next fall to prove you wrong. And you know what? He's made a career. He's made it to this point, proving a lot of people wrong. I don't put that past him, his ability to do that, but he's got to do it because he doesn't look like a guy who belongs in the NHL right now. And it's been months.
I'm cheering for the kid. I love the kid. When he plays his best, he looks like an NHLer. This year he has. That's it.
Everybody is. But he's had two leg injuries that have really gotten in the way. That's not an excuse. It's a reality. But that doesn't change the fact that he has major work to do to prove he has a spot on this team next year. And it won't matter what his name is. He could have any last name that won't be Harvey-Pinard and has nowhere near a resemblance to a Quebecois name. And it won't matter next year if he looks the same as he does this year. And it's not a lack of effort. And there's parts of the game where he is helping penalty kill. But outside of that, it's nowhere near what it was a year ago. And the thought, which wasn't so outlandish when Maxim brought it up at the beginning of the year, feels like it was 5 years ago that could even be something possible, that he might play a few games with Caulfield and Suzuki and not look out of place. So he's got work to do. Is Christian Dvorak going to be here next year? You know, there isn't urgency to get him out the door with 1 year left on his deal, and it could wait until the deadline, maybe, whatever it is. Bio and Beck, even that much more time. Jake Evans will be back one more year, $1.7 million. You survive with that, maybe. But, like, I'm looking at – there's, like, a list of, like, 6, 7 guys. Like, I don't think – Jesse Ylönen, I would – if you bet me right now that he's going to get a qualifying offer, I'm like, I would bet against that with all my money almost. Like,
he failed the audition this year. They gave him a nice audition. He failed it. Sad but true.
It's a dangerous game to give up on players that are his age, okay? But you can't keep everybody and you can't sign everybody. And I don't know. You know, the skill is undeniable, but the rest of the game isn't there. So, like, you have a bunch of guys here that it's not just about adding to the team in this summer. Yeah. Ken Hughes has a big job to do to subtract pieces, to integrate young talent, to go out and get a couple of real forwards and to make more of some of the players who are going to be stuck here, whether it's Gallagher and Anderson or one of the two or whatever it is. You've got to see more stories out of those guys like Armia, like Evans, where you're getting something, even if it's not what they're being paid.
I'm I'm happy that Primo played the way he played last night versus the Rangers. They had 46 shots, the Rangers did. For the first two periods, I mean, the score was 1-1 after 40. He was absolutely fantastic. And in the third period, it's not that he wasn't fantastic. There's a Joel Armia penalty that ends up being a power play goal for the Rangers. There's a Josh Anderson big blunder that we talked about before that ends up leading to a goal. And it was clearly, it was just one of those situations where the Rangers decided to put it in fifth gear. And the Canadians kept up for 40 minutes, and then they just couldn't keep up in period number three. That happened. Also happened that you saw a little bit of brilliance from Artemi Panarin, too.
Oh, my God.
The bread man was really good last night for the New York Rangers. All right, okay, but I was happy, Primo, because he put up a shutout versus, what was it, Anaheim, put up a shutout, I think, versus Columbus. He came within a minute of putting up a shutout versus Philadelphia, and we're like, okay, good, fantastic, great. But let's see him do it versus a really good team now, or a team with a lot of
talent. Stopped all 15 shots he faced against Toronto also on Saturday.
That's true, too. But let's see him put it together versus a team that has a lot of talent. On Thursday, it didn't work out. They gave up 7 versus Tampa. But, you know, it definitely worked out. It definitely worked out on Sunday.
He's allowed to have a bad game. I mean, that's happened. He's had about two of them this year. I saw some people tweeted at me, like, ever since they ended the three-goalie rotation, he's been good all year. He's been good since the beginning of the season. He went into last night's game with a 9-10 save percentage. The best development here is that you're seeing a guy who, through 21 appearances, is showing, A, he can handle more than that, and B, there's three elements here. A, he can handle more than that. B, all the things that you would have said about it a year ago as being the biggest weaknesses are starting to look like strengths. And he's always said that his anticipation is his greatest strength. Oh, did I just lose you for it? I got you.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Yeah.
You didn't lose me.
He always said that his greatest strength was his anticipation, but his actual physical strength didn't allow him to get to it. And he worked a lot on his physical conditioning and strength over the last year. And he could take that to another level this summer. And the C element here, and the three things that are really important in terms of how he's developed, is he's going to push Montembeau. And Montembeau needs that. Like, he can't just rest on his laurels and say, okay, I'm the number one guy now, and I'll continue to be able to be as good as I've been, and that'll be enough. It might not be if Caden continues to push him the way he can. And I think what this year should be doing for Caden Primo is motivating him to really push Montembeau and prove that he can be even better than he's been this year. And he has that potential. I don't care if he was drafted in the seventh round. I don't care if he's 199th pick overall. He showed, you know, people are gaga over Jacob Fowler and the season he's had with the best team in the nation in Boston College. Like, Caden Primo was a 931, 929 save percentage goaltender with Northeastern, that a team that wasn't as good as that. And he showed that he had potential to inevitably potentially become a number one in the NHL before he got here and was thrown into the fire a little too soon, and everybody created their doubts about him. So this is a huge, huge, huge summer for him moving forward. And
hey, yeah,
he's got a lot of positive momentum to go into it with.
You know what? We'll end it with this, that I want to talk to you about something that I haven't heard too many people talk about, but because I'm, you know, very, very good at this stuff and a step ahead, I'm going to bring it up here. Thank you. All kidding aside, were you surprised that Montembeau got pulled on Saturday? Considering one of the knocks on Marty this year has been that he took way too long to pull his goalies, or he didn't pull them. Case in point, that game in Boston where they gave up 9. If memory serves me well, he kept Montembeau in there for 8 goals. That game versus the Blues, if memory serves me well, Jake Allen was in for all 7 in a 7-2 loss. There was a game in New York, which I think they lost by a score of 7-4.
Yeah.
Which, if memory serves me well, they didn't pull their goaltender in that one either. And Samuel Montembeau was in for every goal against. So Montembeau was in for 7 versus the Rangers. Allen was in for 7 versus St. Louis. Montembeau was in for 8 of 9 versus Boston, but yet on Saturday, Montembeau gets pulled for Primo, even knowing that Primo was starting the next night in New York.
I think that's all. At 4-0, I think that's all the more reason to get Primo in there. This is a touchy subject for a couple of reasons, but let's just start with the logic of that. Like, you're playing the next night in New York, you're down 4-0, less than halfway through a game against Toronto. You may as well get Primo warm so that he goes into Sunday night feeling the way he ended up looking, right? Like, he looked pretty good. Maybe if Primo isn't good for that half a game against the Leafs, they go back to Montembeau. I don't know. But the only thing that surprised me is that Marty didn't pull him a goal earlier, because after that third one, it was like, get him out of there. Like, it's just, it's not working tonight, and it's very clear it's not working tonight. And Marty said after the game, it wasn't working. You know, he was asked why he did it. It wasn't working, and he could tell that. There is a balance, and when I say it's a touchy subject, it is, because you ask any goaltender who's in that situation, not all of them react the way Patrick Roy did on December 2nd, 1995. Most of them want to battle it out with their team. Like, they want to battle it for themselves. They want to battle it for their teammates who they feel they've let down and have an opportunity to keep them in a game, even if they've potentially taken them out of it with their performance. So it's a fine line. Marty is definitely deserving of some criticism in terms of how he's handled that this year. And it's something he'll probably address in a different way when the team has expectations on it the way it should in a year from now. I understand they've had internal expectations all the way through. They've tried to win every game they're playing, but it's just the dynamic's going to change here a little bit. And some of the making sure you're not overly sensitive parts of Marty's coaching are probably going to dissipate a little bit. He's still always going to be himself. He's still always going to be a compassionate guy who cares about his players. I don't think any of that's going to change, but you want to hold people accountable to the standards that they create for themselves. And I think Marty is going to be determined to do that.
Fantastic stuff, my friend. Thank you for being with me today and accommodating and doing it a little bit earlier. And thank you for talking most of the show, because once again, I have been extremely under the weather and just trying to fight this one out here. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Never a problem. Take care, man.
All right. Thank you, man. All right. There you have it. Eric Engels of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. Special thanks to, once again, Energy Transportation Group, our proud sponsor and partner, as well as Playground. We thank them very much, as well as Labitta TB, and we thank them very much. And we want to thank you, our Sick Army and our Sick community, for watching. You watched on YouTube, you watched on Facebook, and you watched on Twitter. If you liked it, like it, share with your friends, comment Sick, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. Today, I really was sick, literally speaking, goes without saying. And for Agnello and Sammy at Master Control, they're Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro. We'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same place, only this time, right after the Montreal Canadiens hockey game tomorrow night. And I look forward to this one. And tomorrow night, I can already tell you that Maxime Lapierre will join us, as he usually does on Tuesday nights, for the most part on game night, as the Montreal Canadiens host John Tortorella and the Philadelphia Flyers. And we'll be back at 10 p.m. To talk about that hockey game. Of course, once again, special thanks to all of you for watching. Have a great night. The Sick Podcast. Cheers.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow The Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.